And earlier this afternoon, I spoke via Skype to one of the many international aid workers trying to help in Nepal. Andy Bastable is head of water and sanitation at Oxfam. He's in Kathmandu. Andy, tell us, what are the immediate challenges you face on the ground?
It's mainly around logistics. So you've got, it's a big, Kathmandu's a big city. And then it's got big suburbs. So, and then you've got bits of areas where buildings have fallen down, and then you've got little groups of displaced people. So at the moment there's 16 designated, official areas of displaced people. And then you've got a lot more unofficial sort of areas where people are. So to get round these kind of quite blocked rubbles or blocked with kind of traffic, to get round to each site, our job as Oxfam is supplying kind of water, and we're doing the sanitation at these sites. We've started doing water trucking. So it's mainly around the logistics of getting to each place, quickly.
It seems like the biggest challenge might be the scope. How do you even gauge what the scope of the need is?
That's true, that we're trying to actually do two things at once. One, actually start work. So we're starting water trucking. We're starting building kind of our Oxfam tanks at these display centres. And at the same time, we've got other teams out assessing kind of further areas. Because at the moment, it does seem that a lot of the efforts are in the immediate Kathmandu area because it's easier to get to.
Are the aftershocks presenting a challenge, a logistical challenge?
Yes, but mostly in the fear of the people, that the people who've been in their house and know family and friends who've been killed, or their own houses kind of collapse. These aftershocks represent a huge traumatic event, and just it reminds them of all the trauma that they went through kind of in Saturday morning. So it's more a traumatic thing. Most of the old buildings that have fallen down will have fallen down, and now we've just maybe got small falls as the aftershocks occur.
Is there any way to compare what we're seeing unfold here with other disasters of this type around the world?
Yes, from what I've seen so far, that this isn't on the scale of Haiti. It's not, the mass devastation of Kathmandu is not the same as the mass devastation in Port-au-Prince in 2010. So it's not quite as big as that, but it's we could say covering a wider area. And I think some of the poverty levels when you get out of Kathmandu are more extreme.
Thank you, Andy Bastable of Oxfam.
Thank you very much.
The 7.8 magnitude earthquake was the strongest to hit the Himalayan nation in more than 80 years. The country is at the junction of a major fault line between two tectonic plates, the Indian and Eurasian ones. As you can see on this color-coded map, strong shaking was felt far away from the epicenter, northeast of Kathmandu. Orange and yellow areas indicate strong to severe shaking. In the days since, there have been dozens of aftershocks. To help us understand more, I'm joined by David Applegate, Associate Director for Natural Hazards with the U.S. Geological Survey. So give us the geological explanation, the layman's explanation for what actually happened here.
So what we're looking at with this area is it's a collision zone. And most of the areas around the world where we have tectonic plates colliding one against the other, we have oceanic plates going underneath continental ones. Well, this is one where you have a head-on collision. India slamming into Asia. It's been going on for the last 50 million years. But while it's an inexorable process, the actual on-the-ground effect is the faults are locked up. They gain stress, builds up, and finally they break.
So,
and that's an earthquake.
This is an area that was prone to these quakes. Was it inevitable that it was? Did you see it coming?
Absolutely. It was inevitable when we think about the long-term hazard. This is, there's been significant earthquakes. Now, there haven't been a lot in the past, say, 50, 60 years. But if we look back deeper into time, we see a series of large quakes. The fact we hadn't had them recently means that stress has been building up, and so there was an inevitability, not the exact moment of when it would happen, but that it would happen.
So is what we saw the culmination of a slow buildup, or is it a precursor to more?
Well, in this, for this particular zone, it relieved the stress. You saw the on the map that it starts in one place, that epicenter, but then it ruptured to the
northwest. I said northeast, but yeah.
That's right, off to the northwest, and then it ruptured to the east past Kathmandu. So a whole segment of this large fault has ruptured. Now that relieves the stress there, but it does mean that there may be additional stress on other sections of the fault.
So is it fair to say if the last big quake in this region happened in 1934, more than 80 years ago, that this was overdue?
Well, there have been other events, other sections of the plate, but for this particular zone, that 1934 quake didn't relieve the stress. It was further off to the west. I think the epicenter was just south of Mount Everest. So it relieved the stress in that area, but it didn't relieve it in this area.
Much discussion about aftershocks. We heard the aid worker talk about the fear, but there's also some real other concerns as well.
Well, aftershocks are one of the things that are most difficult about dealing with a large disaster, earthquake disaster. With a hurricane, the weather comes through, the sun comes out, people are able, it's over. But with the aftershocks, it's that constant drumbeat. And as we heard from from Oxfam, the issue here is it's also a mental one. In addition to just the physical effects of it, that for every magnitude 5, and we've had we have over 50 magnitude 4 and 5 earthquakes, and even a couple magnitude 6s in the aftershock zone across that whole area that we described. Well, so in addition to that, that means you still have, say, another hundreds of smaller 3s and 4s. That are going to be affecting people just constantly. And so that's a huge challenge.
Given what you know about the area's topology, is the death toll likely to rise?
There are still a lot of areas where, as we heard, a lot of the focus has been on Kathmandu, but particularly the epicentral region. It's very remote. We know it's not just the issue of the earthquake shaking itself, but also landslides are going to have happened throughout that region. That can have further effects, damming rivers, potential there for down the stream. So,
David Applegate of U.S. Geological Survey, thank you.
Thank you.